There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Miranda Janelle, Justin Zellers, and Pepper Geezy. Coming up on DTNS, Elon Musk had an interesting weekend. Clothing is smarter than ever, and when self-driving cars go rogue. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, April 11th, 2022. From Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
In lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Straffolino.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Well, we got a lot of news to talk about today, so let's just get right into it with a few tech things you should know about.
Last year, Meta asked its oversight board for guidance on handling private residential information. In February, the board recommended Meta tighten policies on sharing private addresses, citing doxing concerns. Based on that recommendation, by the end of 2022, Meta will remove an exemption that permitted users to share a residential address as long as it was publicly available. Meta will let users share their own addresses, but other users cannot reshare them.
Nikkei Asia sources say that leading chip tool makers warned clients of wait times of up to 18 months on crucial machines, with shortages on everything from lenses and values to microcontrollers and engineering plastics. The shortage could reportedly impact plans by chip makers like TSMC, Samsung, and also Intel to open new fabs as early as 2023. Delivery of chip production tools already increased from 3 to 4 months back in 2019 to between 10 and 12 months in 2021. The sudden increased demand as chip makers build new factories has combined with existing logistics problems to cause these delays.
Coinbase temporarily disabled using the payment system UPI to buy cryptocurrency in India. The National Payments Corporation of India, which oversees UPI, issued a statement after Coinbase enabled support for UPI, stating it is not aware of any crypto exchange using UPI.
China's National Press and Publication Administration approved 45 games for monetization in the country, its first game approval since July 2021. Notably, no titles from Tencent or NetEase were included in these approvals.
And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved Fitbit to use an algorithm that can passively monitor heart rhythms. This would allow for a wearable to monitor for atrial fibrillation while someone is sleeping and alerting them if detected. In a May 2020 study, Fitbit found the algorithm correctly identified AFib 98% of the time. Fitbit will roll out the algorithm in the U.S. across a range of heart rate-enabled devices.
All right, Rich, let's talk a little bit more about smart clothing and where we are on that front.
Yeah, like sometimes when we think about smart clothing, we're thinking like, hey, let's throw some sensors in here. But there's another kind of way to do it. And it's, we're starting to see it with custom clothing. This isn't a new category by any means. I mean, you can always commission custom clothes or something like that. But affordability is another question. Amazon made forays into the custom clothing category with its experimental custom clothing service Made For You. This initially launched back in December 2020, offering casual t-shirts. Amazon has now expanded its Made For You offerings for the first time, now offering athletic shirts that can be customized in roughly 50 ways, from things like a different fit, necklines, sleeve length, and, of course, color. Both the casual and athletic shirts are $25. It's not a starting cost, it's just what they cost. Now, to get your custom shirt, Amazon measures your body in the Amazon app with a combination of entering your weight and height, so, you know, kind of self-reported metrics, with two photo uploads. Made For You compiles this data to get your actual measurements. and you can see a virtual try-on of the shirt with a 3D avatar with roughly your build. And if the fit doesn't, if the shirt doesn't fit when it arrives, you can alter the measurements online and then get a free replacement. As Sarah Perez at TechCrunch points out, Amazon has been playing around with this idea for a while, going all the way back to its discontinued Echo Look camera from 2017. This kind of focused on doing things with comparing stuff in your closet, but doing kind of the AR try-on aspect of it as well. While other mass market retailers haven't quite taken the full plunge on offering similar custom clothing offerings, Walmart launched similar AI-powered virtual try-on technology on its app last month, and that was powered by its acquisition of the startup ZKit last year. So, Sarah, I'm just curious on your end. I mean, does this... Have you ever ordered, I guess, any custom clothing like with this kind of 3D try? Have you tried any 3D try on and then custom clothing, I would ask?
I have for the purposes of, you know, being on a tech news show. And I've been doing it since like the late 90s, honestly. I mean, this whole the whole idea of virtual try on, make sure it works for you, make sure that you minimize, you know, having to send something back because it wasn't quite right, or, you know, whether it was the fit or the color and, you know, all of that stuff. I've been waiting for decades, literal decades, for this to just become part of, you know, common life. And, you know, part of that is I always use shoes as an example because it's like, you know, shoes got to fit. Shoes don't fit. You can't just sort of like make it work the way that I would maybe just like make it work with a t-shirt kind of thing. And it surprises me that after all of this time and so many companies throwing money at the problem, Amazon in particular, that we're not really at a place yet where we're out of the testing phase of all of this. Like, you know, let's test it and see if Rich gets the perfect t-shirt that he so desires. I just feel like we would have been farther along at this point.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, I want to say it was like 2019, 2018. I did one of these, like scan yourself with your phone, get your measurements. And then this company, it wasn't Amazon. It was a startup. I don't recall the name now off the top of my head, but they would send you like a black t-shirt and a pair of jeans that would be based off your measurements. And neither one of them fit me quite right. I don't know if it was more of like a streetwear style. So I knew it was going to be a little baggier, but like jeans never quite worked. Mm-hmm. So I am open to this category because not that I feel like t-shirts, though, are the easiest thing to solve in this equation in a lot of ways. One, for just in terms of like holding up your phone, it's easier to take a selfie of like your upper body than like your full body if you wanted to do more custom stuff. To me, I feel like pants are the trickier part of this, right? There's more elements to it that you need to kind of customize from your
waistline. You know, length, it all matters. No, but I'm with you. I mean, t-shirts, I can't tell you how many extra large t-shirts I've gotten where I'm like, okay, I'll just like cut it off, you know, halfway through and then it'll fit me. It's still going to be kind of baggy, but still, you know, you have some fun with it. But yeah, there are a lot of clothing items where it actually really does matter. And I love this idea. And I think, you know, the pandemic, I'm surprised that we don't have a more concrete solution at this point, because so many people were sort of like, I got to order clothes and, you know, live inside my home and I'm not going to be able to try them on beforehand. And, you know, maybe they're, you know, looking at second market stuff, et cetera, et cetera, that we wouldn't be further along on this. But it still seems like every few months you get this like Amazon is testing a new way to like virtually try on clothes. I'm like, we've been doing this for a long time.
Well, and I do feel like it speaks to not just the technological challenge of, you know, hey, take two pictures of yourself and build a 3D model based on, you know, your height and weight or something like that. To make like the virtual try-on is its own aspect. But I imagine a lot of the reason Amazon is slow rolling this is also when it comes to like figuring out how to work the supply chain for this, whether they're doing, you know, a t-shirt creation on demand or they like stockpile, like we're just going to have a whole bunch of different combinations. We'll algorithmically know which ones are the most popular. And we'll send, like, I'm sure a lot of that is just figuring out, okay, how do we do this in a way that we can actually someday make money? I don't know if they're making money on $25 a shirt. I imagine it's with Amazon's practices, you know, pretty razor thin margins if they are making margins. So I feel like the technology of it is what gets my attention. But then the more I think about it, the more the supply chain of it has to be pretty tricky to kind of figure out to do in a cost effective way. $25 is kind of crazy for what they're offering. I feel like that's just what you pay for a regular t-shirt a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I welcome being able to virtually try on things and it be a commonplace part of life because nothing ever fits me. But moving on, back in February, GM's Cruise self-driving unit started offering public taxi rides in San Francisco. And, you know, some folks had you know, tweeted and otherwise talked about the fact that they had gotten the rides. It's, you know, it's a real thing. A video, which was first posted on April 2nd, but also shared by 9to5's Seth Weintraub, who posted it on his personal account on Saturday, so a couple weeks later, where San Francisco police tried to pull over a driverless Cruise vehicle in San Francisco's Richmond District. For anybody who's not familiar with the Richmond, it's a pretty big kind of grid district where you know a lot of people live, very residential. The cops found the car not only did not have a driver in the front seat, but then it just left. Cruise has since commented on this particular video clip saying its car yielded to police and then moved to the nearest safe location for that traffic stop. So it wasn't fleeing the scene, was simply moving to a safe location, adding an officer contacted Cruise personnel and no citation was issued. Cruise also said about the incident, "We work closely with the SFPD on how to interact with our vehicles, including a dedicated phone number for them to call in situations like this." Cruise also produced a video to teach first responders how to approach its vehicles. You know, Rich, I sort of wondered when this would happen for the first time, when, you know, there is some sort of a, not necessarily a, this autonomous car is in the wrong, but we'd like to ask this autonomous car a couple of questions. And the car goes, "I'm not a human. Bye." And where we go from there. I mean, I think Cruise probably is doing what it can, considering that this is a limited test. There aren't that many people who are hailing these autonomous cars. It's, you know, it's a small test, but with potential to be much bigger. Obviously, that's what the company is interested in. And what happens? Yeah, when there's no one to blame. There's no one liable necessarily. There's no human, right? I mean, you could say that the humans at Cruise are liable if you were upset about what had happened at any particular scene. But yeah, it's kind of the Wild West.
Well, and the fact that, at least in this situation, now, Sarah, as you said, this is extremely limited test in one specific part of one specific city. So this is not indicative of a wider autonomous rollout or something like that. But in this particular instance, Cruise is pretty much explicitly asking police to kind of, you know, watch this training video. And this is how you interact with it, as opposed to, I think what all of us are kind of used to is like the police are going to tell you what you're going to do. And then you pull over, you do whatever. And that's like, to me, when I have an interaction with the police, I just assume the onus is on me to listen to what they're saying. I don't know. So it's weird to see this training video where they're like, here is what police need to do to properly interact with this vehicle. And a lot of it seems to rely on calling this support number. They have a couple support numbers that they give out over the course of the video, but effectively, you know, they have people standing by. I was curious about what are the mechanisms for how Cruise is kind of determining when to pull over for police. And it sounds like it's mostly based on sirens, which I guess is also how humans do it. They just have some really high frequency microphones that can determine all sorts of emergency services coming through and know when to pull over. Knowing that and watching the video, it all makes sense once you kind of hear Cruise's explanation, right? The vehicle heard the siren, it pulled over, but then when it realized that it was going to have an interaction with the police, at least what it looked like, it then pulled over to what it considered like a safe spot for a prolonged interaction. Which again, like if there was a human behind the wheel, I don't know what the police interaction would be in that situation. I imagine these vehicles are all they have giant sensor towers on the top. They're all bespeckled with Cruise branding, so they know it's an autonomous car, right?
I mean, I think they'll know it more and more, you know, as we go forward. But yeah, it's sort of like, okay, let's say I'm behind the wheel. I've done something wrong, illegal. I don't know, whatever. Even if I didn't mean to, you know, and if there's a cop car behind me, woo woo, then, you know, you pull over and And if I don't, I'm in a world of hurt, right? High speed chase time. Mm-hmm. But a cruise vehicle is not going to do that. A cruise vehicle is just going to be like, let's go somewhere safe. And I think that really changes the dynamic a lot of trying to figure out, okay, who's in the wrong here? Mm-hmm. You know, what did someone or something do that is dangerous to others? Because that's the whole, you know, that's the whole traffic violation thing, you know, in general. And then, yeah, like, I mean, we're calling a 1-800 number to be like, hi, cruise. This is Officer Lane here, and you know, your car did something kind of weird. It's parked in a safe parking lot, but like, need to talk to its mother. I feel like these situations, not that we can't solve these situations, but I feel like this is a big question mark to me right now.
Well, yeah, and it's a matter of scale, right? Because yes, cruise in one specific part of one specific city can just say, call this 1-800 number and we'll take care of you. No problem. You know, we have operators and we know exactly what cars are there. When we get to the point where we have multiple companies doing this across multiple countries, I have to imagine there's going to be some sort of infrastructure where this could be handled on almost a dispatch level, right? Where there are APIs that can interact, that, you know, that can kind of programmatically do this with oversight or you know, whatever needs to happen. But the idea that it's basically like calling, it feels like it's calling OnStar, right? To like, hey, your autonomous taxi didn't behave the way I need you to shut it down so it doesn't like roll over my foot or something like that.
Yeah, it's not unlike that, but I think on a much wider scale. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this gains the wide adoption that I think, you know, many of us kind of go, okay, you know, this autonomous car thing might have some legs, haha. But yeah, if that happens, how do we deal with these sorts of things, especially when, you know, rolling through a stop sign is, if nobody was hurt, okay, you know, might get cited. But it, you know, these are vehicles, you know, they're killing machines if they want to be. And we have to figure this all out sooner than later.
Well, one thing that's a vehicle for watching entertaining videos is Netflix, and it began rolling out a new feedback option for users to power better recommendations. Users can now select two thumbs up in addition to the far more pedestrian standard thumbs up and thumbs down. According to Netflix's director of product innovation, Christine Dois-Cardet, users didn't feel simple likes and dislikes were sufficient options and hope the new option will help surface recommendations in Netflix's considerable library. Of course, Netflix used to offer an even more nuanced feedback option, offering 5-star rating systems until 2017. And interestingly, when they said they did that, when they switched to the thumbs up, thumbs down, they said one of the big side effects of that was they got way more ratings as a result, because it was a simple binary. I liked it, I didn't like it, as opposed to, was it 3 stars? Was it 4 stars? So, it seems like, okay, maybe the binary doesn't quite get you the recommendation juice that maybe a love. I've heard some people say this is a love versus a like, Sarah. So are you going to be giving the double thumbs up to anything anytime soon?
Maybe. I mean, we were joking about Siskel and Ebert for anybody who's familiar with the franchise from, you know, back in the day on, I don't even know what channel it was, ABC, I think. But yeah, the idea of two thumbs up kind of meaning more or giving more credence to something than a single thumbs up, thumbs down, that does make sense to me. I feel like, and this goes, you know, when I rate books online or movies, which I don't do that often, but sometimes I'm compelled, or I rate podcasts, and, you know, thank you for rating our podcast, everybody. We love to read your reviews, but yeah, when you introduce something, like if it's a thumbs up, thumbs down, it's kind of like, I mean, what if I was sort of ho-hum on a Netflix movie? Well, I have to choose one, right? So like maybe I would say it was a thumbs down, even though I didn't really hate the movie that much, but I really didn't love it either. And so there's a nuance that can't really be described. I guess this is a little bit more of a way to give people an option to have a little bit more say in what they don't like and like. I also do think that the rating system in general, and I'm not just talking about when you're, you know, watching cinema or anything, but the rating system in general of sort of like, you know, 1 through 5, how you feeling? I mean, I almost always say, as long as something terrible didn't happen, 5.
Yeah.
Even though maybe it was more like 3, but I'm like, I want to be rude. You know, I mean, if something terrible happened, then it's, you know, it's 1 and I'll tell you why. But I think that it's like a very delicate balance between offering not enough choice for someone to sufficiently explain how they feel about a content and just saying like, too hard. You're giving me too many options. And so I'm just going to say something easy.
Yeah, I do like though, like in the classic, like, how likely are you to recommend this? Very likely, somewhat likely, neither likely.
Nor, exactly.
It's like it, you were, we're, I we're mean, getting, if they have the double thumbs down, we're basically back to the to a 4-star system at that point. And
I like never in my life think to myself like, I am somewhat likely to do this again. I either am or I'm not.
The way I view this is like, for me, the way the double thumbs up has to work is like, those are almost have to be the movies or shows that are in like your canon, right? Like these are like the movies that define, I don't know, like the all time favorites, like, you know, whatever those happen to be, like the character defining movies and TV shows that you have, right? Like, I feel like that would be a more useful, like, here's what's on like my top movie shelf. And then it's like, oh, that made me laugh. I'll give it a thumbs up. I maybe never will watch it again, but I didn't regret watching it. I have a weird way of thinking about movies though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that this is, you know, obviously Netflix feels like their feedback data that they're collecting could be better. And so that's where this is coming from, right? It's like, sure, it's, you know, it's for the people, but it's also for the company. So it'll kind of be interesting to see how things get weighted and gauged going forward. Well, if you have a thought about anything we talk about on the show, might be about movies, might be about something else. If you don't know our email address and you just have a burning desire to share your thoughts with us, please do so. We really, really like your email. Please keep it coming. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Well, folks, it was a big weekend on Twitter, especially for walking back things on Twitter. The company reverted its change to deleted tweets embedded on third-party sites. Now, if you're not familiar with how this works, basically, for a short period of time, if I had embedded a tweet from Rich and I posted it on my blog somewhere off Twitter, but I was using Twitter's API, and Rich then deleted that tweet, then my embedded tweet would also be deleted. The embed would not be deleted, but the tweet itself would be. Twitter says this will now continue to be displayed as the original block quote. And a Twitter spokesperson said, "We're rolling back this change for now while we explore different options." There was also a little announcement, you may have heard of it, by the CEO, Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal, that Elon Musk declined to join the company's board of directors after it had been reported that he would join the board of directors, at least get one seat. Agrawal said that as Twitter's biggest shareholder, Musk will remain open to his, we will remain open to his input, meaning Musk. So Musk went from being a passive investor, owning 9.2% of Twitter, to appointed to the board, to then declining a seat on the board in less than a week. So you might say, well, why wouldn't he want a seat on the board? Doesn't that, you know, mean some power, you know, offers some credence, he gets a say? In a note to employees, Agrawal hit on a potential reason. He said, quote, "We also believe that having Elon as a fiduciary of the company where he, like all board members, has to act in the best interest of the company and our shareholders was the best path forward," end quote. So this would potentially limit Musk's activity in relation to Twitter, or at least open up the door that he wasn't acting in the best interest of the company. There's also some direct financial limitation of being on the board. Those of us who don't sit on board seats may not know this, but as Musk would have to abide by a stock purchasing limit, limiting any future stake to 0.9% of the company is part of this deal. Musk already owns 9.2%, but if he was sitting on the board seat and he really wanted to make some moves and he was capped at 14.9%, that actually might not make sense depending on what he's going for here. And of course, Rich, as you know, and as anybody on Twitter knows, there's been a lot of speculation about what is going on here.
Yeah. And initially reading Parag Agrawal's statement kind of on this, and he kind of shared the note with employees in a Twitter post, the first thing that stood out to me was that fiduciary duty, right? I was kind of, you know, parsing, trying to read in between the lines there. And, you know, Elon Musk likes to use Twitter for public relations for a lot of the other companies that they're CEO of or co-owner of or something like that. So I could, and, you know, we've kind of talked about on this show about, hey, potentially, creating a kind of analogous free speech platform that's built on a more, you know, decentralized Twitter that's kind of been out there for a while. There is an ongoing project within the company and without the company in a lot of ways. So all of those combined, like maybe having that fiduciary responsibility would open up at least inconvenient investigations if he's going off on Twitter and something like that. But there was an SEC filing that was amended today that had some interesting notes. And essentially it kind of took away since he was about to be appointed to the board, the SEC filing mentioned that 14.9% cap on any future stake, but it was revised to say that Elon Musk may engage in discussions with the board and or members of Twitter's management team concerning things like potential business combinations, strategic alternatives, and it opened up and it specifically said Musk may express his views to the board and or members of the management team through social media and other channels. So I'm thinking of all of this, and I'm like, okay, he already has a 9.2% stake in the team. He's like one of the richest people in the world. We know he has the money to just outright buy all the extant shares or all the outstanding shares of Twitter. Potentially, right? Financially, that is not a problem for Elon Musk, right?
Yeah.
Not being a board member, though, and having those stipulations that he can basically talk about potential business combinations, he constantly now has the ability to say, I could just buy it tomorrow, or I could just talk to members of the board, I could talk to members of Twitter's management as our biggest shareholder, and they're open to his feedback or his input, Mr. Agrawal said in his post. I feel like then he doesn't have to necessarily buy it. He gets a lot of influence and he doesn't have any of the red tape of being a fiduciary on top of all of that.
Well, yeah. I feel like I've read a lot of conspiracy theories about this because people are genuinely just sort of befuddled. What is going on here? Like, is Elon Musk trying to burn Twitter to the ground? Maybe. I don't totally know what that would solve for anybody if that were indeed the case. And I don't pretend to know what's really going on. But for somebody with so much influence, obviously, a celebrity on Twitter, has been for some time, breaks a lot of news on Twitter. One would argue breaks a lot of fake news on Twitter. You know, depends on, you know, where you stand kind of thing. The idea that Elon Musk would gain a board seat and then have to, you know, maybe rein it in a little bit for the good of the company, because that's what you do on the board. And for him to be like, and again, allegedly, for him to be like, nah, I don't want to do that. You know, I want more control than this. You know, I want to be able to do what I want to do. I want to say what I want to say. I don't want to be held to the rules of the board. That introduces a lot of strange questions. I mean, we talk in hostile takeover. I mean, I guess that would be like a very dramatic way that this could end. But then even then, well, then what? I mean, what then what happens to this social network that, you know, you either like Twitter or you don't, but it is, Twitter is a very pervasive part of how, you know, what news is disseminated, and it would be pretty strange for it to go away.
Yeah. And to anyone that would think, okay, you know, is he trying to burn Twitter down? I guess it depends. Obviously, he has a vision for Twitter. Say what you will about Elon Musk, he seems to be good about taking large, giant lumps of cash and then turning them into larger lumps of cash over time. Like, you know, yeah. Whatever you want to say about his business strategy, he seems to like money. I don't think he would invest billions of dollars purely for the sake of the lulls or just to burn people or just to do that. Clearly he has a vision for Twitter. He's expressed it as much as expressing concerns about free speech, expressing concern about, you know, definite, like very specific features, very specific implementations of subscriptions and stuff like that. So I would caution against any hyperbole in terms of like, oh, he's going to, he wants to destroy Twitter. Now, you may not like the product that it turns into under, as he is a major stakeholder. I think he's seeing a way that he can exert a lot of influence on a company that's very important to his other businesses without kind of running afoul of the SEC or other parties.
Yeah. Well, the story is not going to go away. I'm pretty sure of that. That's one thing I'm sure of. So we'll keep you updated best we can as things unfold, as they have been hour to hour. But we do have a few brand new bosses we got over the weekend. We'd like to thank them now. Aaron, Jesse, and Matt here just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Jesse. And thank you, Matt here. By the way, there's a longer version of this show called Good Day Internet. It's available at patreon.com/DTNS. We roll into it right after the show. For now, reminder, we're live Monday through Friday at 4:34 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We are back doing it all again tomorrow with our guest, Chris Ashley. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.